Well, yeah, this message I want to share with you today comes from the book. So I wrote the book. It's called The Dreamer, and it's the life of Joseph. And I wrote it thinking of people who are going through difficulty. You know, God gave him a dream, but he had to overcome obstacles to actually reach that dream. And one of them was disappointment, and I want to talk to you about that this morning. Maybe you know of someone that's disappointed that you can encourage. Maybe you've gone through something, and so there's no disappointment for those whose wills are buried in the will of God. So let me talk about this a little bit. What do you do when you're confronted with a situation that is different than you expected? Disappointment comes from unfulfilled expectations, doesn't it? Solomon said, hope deferred makes the heart sick. So you're hoping in something and it doesn't happen, and you're left with this sick feeling in the pit of your stomach. What do you do with that? What do you do when things didn't turn out the way you expected? I mean, none of us expected what happened in 2020, right? I mean, God saw it coming, but I feel bad for some of the teenagers who couldn't graduate with all of their classmates and so many disappointments. What do you do? Well, I want to use as my text John chapter 11, and you know the story well. Let me just recount it a little bit. I'm going to tell you three stories then this morning. But in John 11, we find the story of three of Jesus' closest friends, Lazarus and his two sisters, Mary and Martha. And Lazarus was sick. And so they sent a message to Jesus. They sent a message through a messenger to Jesus to come quickly because his friend was sick. And verse 5 and 6, so the 11th chapter of the Gospel of John. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So, when he heard that he was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. Wait a minute. Go back to verse 5 again. Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus. Shouldn't it say, so he dropped everything he was doing and he hurried to Bethany to heal him? But no. When he heard, go back to verse 6, when he heard that he was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. Following the 2 days, he said to the disciples, okay, let's go to Judea. They tried to talk him out of it because they knew that the high priest and the Sanhedrin and the religious leaders in Jerusalem were wanting to kill Jesus. And Bethany was only 2 miles. 15 stadia is what it says in the original. It comes from the word stadium. A stadium was about 200 meters, and so about 2 miles away. And they tried to talk him out of it, but Jesus knew that his time wasn't up yet, and he said, no, we're going. So they went. When the report came to Mary and Martha that Jesus was at the gate, their brother had already died, and Martha came out to the gate, and this is what she said, verse 21, Lord, if you'd been here, our brother wouldn't have died. And Jesus said, your brother will rise again. And they thought he was talking about the resurrection of the just in the last days, but he wasn't. He was talking about the miracle that was about to happen shortly after that. And so he asked them, where did they put him? They took him to the tomb. It was a cave. And you know how the story goes. He said, roll away the stone. And when they did, he said, Lazarus, come forth. And the man came back to life. Three stories of disappointment. In each of these stories, the person was disappointed because they didn't realize, they were struggling because they didn't understand that their disappointment was his appointment. Yeah, change one letter, the D for an H. Their disappointment was actually his appointment. So the first story I know very well because it's my own. So I've been working with an organization called Youth with a Mission for many years, since I was a youth. And I'm still young at heart, but not so young in other ways. We have trained many young people, sent them to the nations, approximately 7,000 that we have invested in and trained to some degree. Many of them didn't stay on the mission field. They went back to their home after they went on their initial two-month outreach. But about 25 years into our time in Denver, so my wife and I started Youth with a Mission in Denver, the Lord spoke to me in my quiet time. I want you to get ready, Peter, to see a new growth. I'm about to bring new growth. Prepare for growth is what I felt like the Lord saying. So I was excited. Wow, what is that going to look like? And then for those of you who remember the story from my first book, a former student came in to our facility and he pulled out a 9mm pistol. Unfortunately, this is a very common story right now, but he shot four of our staff. Two of them died that night. Our whole training center was an active crime scene, and in the midst of this, before the police could investigate the situation, crucial immigration paperwork was misplaced, and all of our international staff had to leave. We misplaced it. We didn't send it in because of this crisis, and we couldn't take any new international staff. Everyone else had to leave. If you know anything about Youth with a Mission, we have people from all different nations. This was such a punch in the gut for us. And then about a year and a half after that, we were sued by a guy who, it was an unjust lawsuit. We had sold him some property and he had torn the property down, but he had videotape of structural damage that was hidden with drywall, which we didn't do, but he was suing us for probably, our attorney thought, for about $1 million. The property wasn't even worth that much, but we had to defend ourselves. We had to spend money and eventually settled out of court. And then we found out that at the tune of $500 a day, someone was filtering money through an electronic transfer from our general fund, and it wasn't discovered until tens and tens of thousands, approaching $100,000, that actually had been siphoned out from our account. And then our network server was held for ransom by some company overseas. I don't know if it was the Russians. Everything, a lot of things get blamed on the Russians right now, but and for good reason in some cases. But we went to the FBI. Fortunately, we have the FBI that we can go to, but the FBI said, pay them. We can't do anything about it. So maybe I misunderstood God when he said, prepare for growth. And then two key leaders were involved separately in some issues that leaders should not be involved in, and they had to be dismissed, and it had a ripple effect where other staff moved on. Whew, wow. To say I was disappointed is an understatement. You know, if you've gone through unfulfilled expectations, it leaves you with that sickness in the pit of your stomach, and I'm ashamed to say, a little bit ashamed, that I actually considered quitting. I was willing to entertain the thought of giving up. That's the first story. One of the responses when you're disappointed is to give up, to go, okay, forget it, I'm out. Have you ever felt that way? It's the wrong response. I didn't realize that actually God had purposes that he was allowing in this. And my disappointment was actually his appointment. I believe still, I've heard from him, but you know what? It's getting close to 18 years since he gave me that word. I don't know how he's going to do it, but I'm trusting in him. The second story of disappointment is the story of Abram and Sarai. And later on, Abraham and Sarah after the covenant with God. And we find their story in Genesis. Abram marries his sweetheart, a girl from his village. And in that ancestry-based culture, the greatest sign of God's blessing was having children. But unfortunately, Genesis 11 verse 30 tells us that Sarah was barren. She couldn't have children. But one day, God spoke to Abram. He's out taking his quiet time with the Lord at night, and God says in Genesis 15, 5, Abram, look up into the night sky. See the stars? You're going to have children, and you live to see your children's children and their children. And eventually, your descendants will become a great nation. I can just picture him kind of bursting through the front door. Sarai, you won't believe what God spoke to me. We're going to have children. 10 years pass by. And Genesis 16, verse 2. Sarai had an idea. Abram, I know you felt like God spoke to you and told you that we're going to have children, but it's just not happening, honey. I mean, I'm sure she said that in Hebrew, probably. And I'm not getting any younger, you know, so I've had this idea. Why don't you sleep with my Egyptian servant girl and have a child with her, and we'll raise her as our own? Abram thought about it prayerfully for 5 seconds and agreed it would be a good idea. I'm embellishing it, of course, but that wasn't uncommon in their culture. In fact, Rachel did the same thing. For them, the plan wasn't actually deviant, and it wasn't uncommon. It just wasn't God's plan. That was the problem. The next thing we read, another 15 years have gone by. It's been a quarter of a century since God first gave them the promise. Sarai is 89, Abraham is 99, and God reiterates the covenant, Genesis 17, 7 and 8. I'm going to establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you and their generations. And he said, also I will give to you and your descendants after you the land in which you are a stranger. All the land of Canaan is an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And then verse 16, he said this, and Sarai will be the mother. Can you imagine the adrenaline rush that would have shot through Abram's bloodstream at that point? Sarai will be the mother. I mean, they had actually gone out and had a child. They took matters into their own hands. And that's the second thing we can do when we're disappointed, is to take matters into our own hands. I know I've done that at times. So Abram and Sarah didn't recognize that their disappointment was actually his appointment, and God actually had a purpose, but they preempted it and they took matters into their own hands. So the third story of disappointment is the one that we began by reading of Mary and Martha. Lazarus was sick. John 11:3, a message is sent to Jesus. Lord, your friend is very sick. The friend whom you love is sick. Several days later, the messenger returns alone. He was supposed to bring Jesus with him. The conversation probably went something like this. Well, did you give him the message? Yes. And you talked to Jesus personally? Yes. And you made it really clear that our brother is sick? Yes. And what did he say? Well, he just thanked me for the message. And you made it really clear that our brother was sick? Yes. What Mary and Martha didn't understand was that Jesus wanted Lazarus to die. Because God was going to receive greater glory through his resurrection than his healing. Because he's the God of the impossible. So, when I came over from Australia to this country, I met a girl here in California. I fell in love with her, proposed to her in a very goofy way, which I'm not going to tell you about, but she said yes, and we're married in a little church in the San Fernando Valley. And in this church, just about an hour and a bit north of here, there was a man of God who was a businessman. His name was George Otis, George and Virginia Otis. He had started a ministry called High Adventure, but prior to that, he had been the vice president of Learjet. But he had left the company. He'd left Learjet under not so friendly terms. He'd had some strong disagreements with Bill Lear, the owner of the company, and that chapter was over in his life. One day, he's sitting in his living room, minding his own business, reading his Bible, or I don't know what he was doing. Maybe he was watching something on TV, and the Lord spoke to him. George, call Bill Lear on the phone. Well, he didn't want to do that, so he tried to ignore that still small voice of the Lord. But you know how it is. If you've ever done that, the Lord comes back again and says, he said the same thing, call Bill Lear on the phone. But he didn't want to do that, so he argued with the Lord. He began to argue with the Lord, and he said, Lord, I don't even know where he lives. He's got seven houses, and I don't even have the phone number of those houses. And have you ever argued with the Lord, what he was saying to you, right? Anyone ever win an argument with the Lord? Well, just to get the Lord off his back, he decided, okay, I'm gonna flip through my Rolodex. How many of you remember what a Rolodex was? Okay. And he found one phone number for Bill Lear, which was this vacation house in Arizona. He had seven houses, but he only had this one phone number of this vacation house. And he thought, I'll call the number. It's just going to ring lonely in the house. No one's going to answer it. And then the Lord will get off my back because I will have done what he told me to do. So he calls the number and it rings. And then Bill Lear picks up the phone. Hello? Oh, Bill, this is George. Yeah, George, what do you want? Well, George hadn't thought that far ahead. So he just came clean and he said, you know, Bill, I don't know why I'm calling you, to be honest. I just was sitting in my living room this afternoon and God just kept hounding me that I needed to call you on the phone. But I don't know why. And there was a long silence, and then Bill Lear said, well, did God tell you what I was doing right now? And George thought he was being sarcastic, and he said, look, Bill, I have no idea what you're doing right now. All I know is God just wouldn't stay off my back here telling me I needed to call you. And there was another long silence, and finally Bill Lear said, George, I was sitting on the end of my bed with a revolver pointed at my temple right now when the phone rang. That afternoon, Bill Lear gave his life to Jesus Christ. yeah. Whew. Because of a man's willingness to trust him, even when it didn't make sense. What Mary and Martha didn't get is that Jesus wanted Lazarus to die because he wanted a resurrection. The temptation sometimes when we feel disappointed is to think that God doesn't care. For me, it was to give up. For Abram and Sarai, it was to take matters into their own hands. For Mary and Martha, the temptation was to think Jesus didn't care. Sometimes God doesn't answer prayer right away. Have you ever felt that way where God is leaving you on read? You ever heard that? Okay, this is a millennial statement, okay? When someone leaves you on read, not R-E-D, but R-E-A-D, right? You're texting them, You know they're receiving your text, but they're leaving you on read, and they're not answering you. Have you ever felt that way with God? I know I have. We can give up, take matters into our own hands, feel that God doesn't care. And it's okay to be frustrated. I'm sure Mary and Martha were frustrated because they didn't see that their disappointment was actually his appointment. And we all handle rejection in different ways. Mary stayed back in the house, we're told. But Martha, when she heard Jesus is at the gate, she marched out to the gate to meet him. I like Martha. Do you think maybe she gave him the business? Huh? I mean, they were friends, right? Nice of you to show up, Jesus. Would have been really nice if you'd have showed up 2 days ago when we sent for you. You come right away when I cook a meal for you. What took you so long this time? Verse 21, John 11, 21. If you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. The reason for her disappointment is she didn't see that this was his appointment. So we all face disappointments. It would be easy to conclude, well, this is just maybe an isolated case. But Joseph faced disappointment. In my book, what I talk about is the dreamer. God gives him a dream, and then he finds himself at the bottom of a pit. And then he's betrayed and unjustly thrown in prison, and his brothers are back home with his dad living the good life. And, you know, when God gives you a dream, he doesn't just hand it to you. Have you noticed that? He doesn't say, here's your dream, take it. He says, here's your dream, now fight for it. Because you have to be worthy of your calling. Now, someone might say, but none of us are worthy. And it's true. If we were just talking about salvation, none of us are worthy of salvation. But the Apostle Paul says unapologetically in Ephesians 4:1, walk in a manner worthy of your calling. And I found that the temptations that I've just listed here in these three stories are common to all of us. We feel like giving up. We feel like taking matters into our own hands. We feel that God doesn't care. Joseph faced multiple disappointments before all of a sudden, in one day, vice president of Egypt, and God uses him to save many people in the world. David faced disappointment when I think David's disappointment was maybe even greater. Think about this. News arrived that Samuel the prophet was going to be arriving to anoint a new king, and Jesse lined up all his brothers except David. Even his own dad had no ambition for him to be king. Wow. Maybe you had a dad that didn't have ambition for you. You know what? God does. Abram and Sarai faced disappointment when they couldn't have children. Hannah, like Sarai, could not have children. The children of Israel were disappointed when Moses took too long to come back down from the mountain. And so they did what Abram and Sarai did. They took matters into their own hands. They took the jewelry that had been given to them from the Egyptians. God intended to build the tabernacle in the promised land, and they made an idol to worship. Wow. Jesus faced disappointment. Mark 14:50. It wasn't just Judas who betrayed him and Simon Peter that denied him, but in his moment of greatest need, one by one, they all abandoned him. Even God the Father faced disappointment. 1 Samuel 15:11, when the man he chose to be king disregarded his instructions. So what do you do? What do you do when you're disappointed? When maybe you didn't get the promotion that you deserved, or you were excluded from a close group of friends, or you can't have children, or you thought you'd be married by now, or whatever it is, align yourself with the purposes of God. There is no disappointment for those whose wills are buried in the will of God. Align yourself with Him. Lord, I trust in You. Because that's what Hannah did. You know, Hannah couldn't have children. She couldn't have children. She cried out to the Lord, "Lord, give me a child." It didn't happen. Finally, this is how it happened. Finally, she said, "Lord, if You give me a son, I'll dedicate him to You." And she got pregnant. She aligned herself with the purposes of God, with the will of God. So I was with our friend, some of you know Bill Welsh. Bill is a very dear friend. And we're talking about disappointment. And he said, "Hey, have you seen this verse, Psalm 106:13. Psalm 106:13. How do you handle disappointment? Thanksgiving and trusting in the Lord, those two things. Here, talking about the people of Israel, they soon forgot what He had done. And if you, in the NIV, I should have told you, put in the NIV. Is there any way to pull it up in the NIV? Or I can tell you what it says. Okay, in the NIV, I love the way it says, "They soon forgot what He had done, and they didn't wait for His plans to unfold." Whew. So, remember what God has done, and trust Him for His plans to unfold. So, as when Aaron asked me to share with you today and orchestrate it so I could be here this specific Sunday, I wanted to talk to you about this. I found that we're living in a time where there is a lot of disappointment, and the Lord says, "I want you to trust Me. Just remember the good things I've done. Don't give up. Don't take matters into your own hands. Don't think that I don't care. Remember what I've done and wait for My plans to unfold." Can we stand together? I want to lead us in prayer, and then we're going to go back into a song of worship. Worship team, if you want to make your way up here, that'd be awesome. Lord, help us as frail human beings that we are, but You're strong. Help us, Lord, to not allow what we don't know to take away from what we do know. We don't know the future, but we know who holds the future. And we're prepared to trust You with our lives, with our futures. Lord, we want to be worthy of Your calling on our lives. We want you to say, oh, that's my son, that's my daughter, trusting in me, looking to me, not taking matters into their own hands, not thinking that I don't care, not giving up. And so we position ourselves, Lord, as we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, through difficulties, to know that you are with us always. Thank you for that promise. Love you, Lord.